Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymeer Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymeer.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymeer Church of Christ.
If you haven't already, turn to Genesis 24. We've come to the end of Abraham's life, and we've followed him through the roller coaster that's been his going to the Promised Land. And it's fitting that on a night when we're thinking about our seniors, we're thinking about those who've graduated, and we're thinking about the road that's ahead of them, it's fitting for us to focus on this point in Abraham's life. He's come to the end, and as previous chapters tell us, his wife Sarah has passed away. He purchases a place for her to be buried, and he buries her. And I wonder what it was like for Abraham, for a man who had lived with his wife for so long. They had been through so many things together. Can you imagine what would have been going through his mind at this point in his life? Do you think he remembered the first conversation that he had with Sarah when he told her the plan that they were going to be leaving, that they were going to be going to a place that God would show them? Do you think he remembered the times he'd asked her to lie about who she was, just to protect him, not really being concerned about her and her safety? Do you think he remembered the back and forth between Lot or what it was like to go into battle? Do you think maybe he cringed when he thought about Ishmael and he thought about Hagar and the way that situation had worked out? Do you think he remembered the days after days after days where he kept repeating God's promise that they were going to have a child, and slowly that seemed to become more and more of a distant reality? Do you think he remembered back to the tears of joy? And surely there were tears of joy at the birth of Isaac. The joy that that brought to both of them as God's promise was being seen through his birth. I don't know what all was going through Abraham's mind, but as we pick up in Genesis chapter 24, he is very concerned about the future, and he's very concerned about his son and who his son is going to marry. And this would have been a customary time for the father to make a decision about who his son should marry. Arranged marriages were much more common then than we would think of them now. And so there's a decision that needs to be made. And so as we think about the decision that Abraham is faced with, I think there's a pretty good template here for us to think about major decisions in life. And you guys have probably heard the same thing that I can remember hearing time and time again when it was time to graduate, really at any major graduation point, high school or college. All that discussion about choices, and here are all the choices that you're going to make. Well, we hear that over and over again, and eventually that seems old. That seems like that's something that we get tired of listening to, but there's a reason people keep repeating that, and that is because it's true. There are a lot of decisions that are going to be made. And if we can just envision for just a few minutes, and I know I'll let us out in time for us to make it to the banquet, but just a few minutes, I want us to think about the decisions we make and the way our lives are affected by those things. Because when we think about the effects that our decisions have on the rest of our lives, it's easy to forget that to decide to say yes to one thing is, in essence, saying no to something else. When I decide I'm going to spend my time and my energy doing one thing, I'm saying no to several other things I could be doing with that time and energy. If I'm going to invest money in this, I'm saying no to what I could be investing in otherwise. So decisions matter. There's an old story that's attributed to Michelangelo, the great Renaissance artist. Now, you might have learned about Michelangelo in school as a Renaissance artist. You might have been like me and learned about Michelangelo because that was the name of one of the Ninja Turtles, and then later found out that the Ninja Turtles were all named after artists. And so then, you know, I'm not going to ask a show of hands who learned it through the Ninja Turtles or who learned it through school, but I think we all realize that when you think back to someone like Michelangelo, who was famous for so many different things, one of those was the sculpture of David. And he was asked, and this is a kind of an apocryphal story, but I like the imagery here, when he was asked how he knew what to chip away as he was making this sculpture, he said, "I simply chipped away everything that didn't look like David." And I think there's something to that. having an image of what we want to be, where we want to go, and then chipping everything out of our lives, chipping that away until we wind up where our goal is. Where do you want to see yourself? How do you want to look at yourself 10 years from now? Not necessarily where you'll be location-wise or what job you'll have or what you'll be doing, but what kind of person do you want to be? And if we can get that image in our minds, can we chip away at everything else? Because what we're going to see here is that Abraham had a very clear vision of what he wanted his legacy to be. And because he understood his legacy, he understood the decisions that needed to be made along the way. And so we pick up in Genesis chapter 24 and verse 1. Now Abraham was old, advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in every way. Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he owned, "Please place your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you shall not take a wife for my son from among the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I live, but you will go to my country and to my relatives and take a wife for my son Isaac." The servant said to him, "Suppose the woman is not willing to follow me to this land. Should I take your son back to the land from where you came?" And listen to Abraham's response here in verse 6. Then Abraham said to him, "Beware that you do not take my son back there. The Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my birth, who spoke to me and who swore to me, saying, 'To your descendants I will give this land,' he will send his angel before you, and you will take a wife for my son from there. But the woman is not willing to follow you. Then you will be free from this oath. Only do not take my son back there." So the servant placed his hand under the thigh of Abraham his master and swore to him concerning this matter. This chapter is laid out in several scenes where you have two of the main characters in the story discussing what's going to happen with each other. This is the first one, where Abraham sits down with the servant and gives him very clear instructions that he wanted a wife for Isaac, but he didn't want a wife from the surrounding areas. He wanted a wife from his people. But he didn't want Isaac to move away with his wife. He wanted to stay in the land of promise. Abraham's very concerned about that. And then the next scene moves to the servant as he's going searching for this woman. And he has a conversation with God. He prays that he'll have guidance in that situation. And then he meets Rebekah as he's there at the well. It's interesting because Isaac and Rebekah's son, Jacob, is going to meet Rachel at a well. And later on in the book of Exodus, Moses is going to meet his wife at a well. And so there seems to be a theme here running through the thread of Genesis and Exodus. But he's there and he sees Rebekah. And then there's a conversation between the two of them. Then we're introduced to Laban for the first time. We're introduced to her brother. And the text tells us that he looks at the gold jewelry that the servant was wearing, and he's very impressed by that, and he's very nice to the servant. And that's just a little hint of what you're going to find out later in the book of Genesis, that Laban is pretty concerned with wealth and with riches and getting ahead. We just see a little glimpse of that. And then Rebekah decides to go back with the servant, and you have that conversation. And then it culminates at the end of the chapter where Rebekah is introduced to Isaac. It's like you're seeing a movie play out in six different scenes, and you're seeing the way in which this huge decision is made, and you see the emphasis that Abraham places on how it needs to happen. There are just a couple of things I want us to remember tonight. The first is that Abraham was determined to let God set the course for his family. We've seen the times where Abraham decided not to. We've seen the times where he decided to lie. We've seen the times where he wasn't sure about God's promise, and so he wanted to try to rush things. But at the beginning of this chapter, he sits down with this servant, and he is very concerned that God will set the course for his family, and here's how it's going to happen. And he makes him give an oath that he's going to carry this out. Very specific instructions. Abraham understood the importance of this decision. He understood the importance of selecting a wife for his son. In fact, it's interesting to read that later on, in Genesis 27, we read about Esau and Jacob, the sons of Isaac and Rebekah. And we find out that Esau is kind of Isaac's favorite son, and Jacob is Rebekah's favorite son. And I've always wondered why that is. I thought maybe the text tells us, you know, Jacob preferred staying around the home, and Esau preferred to go out and hunt, and so maybe That was why they kind of developed the relationships that they did. But you know, the text tells us something interesting when Esau became an adult. Because verses 34 and 35 talk about the fact that he took wives from, specifically from the Hittites. And we don't read many details, but we do read this. They brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. The relationship between Esau and his parents that gets strained makes a little more sense when we see that a decision Esau made about who to marry had something to do with a strained relationship there. It's a big decision. We can continue looking through the Old Testament and think of an individual like Solomon who had wisdom given to him from God. And yet what turned his heart away was the fact that he had wives who were devoted to idol worship. That turned the heart of this incredibly wise individual away from God. It's a big decision, and it matters, and Abraham knew that, and he wanted to let God set the course. You know, you could apply a lot of decision-making approaches to the decisions you have in life. There are a lot of different questions you could ask. You could ask the question, how much money am I going to make doing this? How much money am I going to make with this job? What are people going to think about me if I take this job? If I'm trying to choose an occupation, what's going to give me the kind of lifestyle that I want? What's going to give the kind of perception that others will have this perception of me that I'm really accomplished, that makes me really seem successful? There are a lot of different grids we could use to kind of plot out our lives. But there is no question more important than asking ourselves, does this glorify God? Is God charting my course? Because it may be that I'll get a different answer if I ask, does this glorify God, than if I ask any of the other questions. It may not be that way. But if I leave out that one question, I'm leaving out the most important thing. Is God charting my course? Do I have a clear goal, a clear definition of what that looks like, and am I willing to chip away anything else? Because there'll be a lot of individuals that'll be happy to make our decisions for us. And if we don't go into those situations knowing what we want to do, then we could be very easily swayed. Abraham was determined not to be. And so he decided to let God set his course. But then he also decided, and we see evidenced here by the servant's actions, that the servant was willing to consult God when it came to any major decision. Look at what happens as the servant goes to carry on this mission later on. In chapter 24. In verse 10, then the servant took 10 camels from the camels of his master and set out with a variety of good things of his master's in his hand. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. He made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at evening time, the time when women go out to draw water. He said, O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, please grant me success today and show loving kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, I am standing by the spring. And the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now may it be that the girl to whom I say, please let down your jar so that I may drink, and who answers, drink, and I will water your camels also, may she be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I will know that you have shown loving kindness, that idea of covenant love in the Old Testament, to my master. Before any major decision comes up, this would be a pretty good cue to take from the servant. In other words, to pray before we make any major decision. Now, I'm not saying it's always going to be as straightforward as what we read about here. We'd probably like to have the kind of confirmation that he had, that he was doing what God had wanted him to do. We don't always see that tangibly right in front of us. But if I'm praying to God when I'm making major decisions, I'm going to be more in tune with his will. And chances are, I'm going to make decisions that glorify him. And if I go into a situation knowing what I want to do and knowing who I want to be, it's going to be a lot easier to make that call. For those of you who are graduating, you're going to be in situations where you're meeting new people and a lot of things are happening, and you will have people that will want to convince you to do certain things. Some of them will be good, some of them won't be. How are you going to determine what you get involved in? How are you going to determine how you use your time? Well, as we think through this grid that we've been giving, we let God set our course, and if I let God set my course, then individual decisions are going to be easier for me to handle. If I've already made the decision that I'm going to keep my life pure, then when I have the opportunity for something that isn't pure to be a part of my life, I've already made that decision, and I'll know how to handle that. If I've already made the decision of the kind of lifestyle I'm going to live, if someone else comes to me and tries to take me away from that and into a different one, it'll be easier because I'll already have made that decision. It won't be easy, but it'll be easier than it would be if I just went in without having ever thought through what was going to happen. Do I have a clear goal of where I want to be, of who I want to be? And am I willing to chip away everything else and work towards that? I would challenge us all to have the same kind of attitude Abraham displays here. That's determined to let God be glorified in whatever we do. And it doesn't matter what age we are or what area of our life we're thinking about. If we don't have a clear concept in our mind of who God wants us to be and how God wants us to live, and if we're not actively pursuing that, it'll be easy to get distracted. It'll be easy to get taken off course. And those little decisions that we make can have a drastic effect on the rest of our life. When I decide to say yes to one thing, I'm saying no to other things. And so I need to be careful and make sure I'm saying yes to the right things. Tonight, if you're thinking about making a change in your own life, there's no greater decision that you could make than to become a Christian. There's no greater choice that could be available. And there's really no greater blessing that we have than the possibility of living a life that's modeled after the God who sent His Son to die for us. Or it may be that you've made that decision, but there's something else that needs to be chipped away. There's something else that needs to be swept out of your life. And you just need the prayers and encouragement of this group of Christians to do it. It's a wonderful resource that God has given us here of brothers and sisters who love each other and want to help each other. If we can help you in any way, please come forward as we stand and as we sing together.